Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Dirty Playologist. It took some doing, but we drugged Keisha and Barb into the studio to record. They're going to be digging deep and getting to the roots of play. Things like knowledge, skills, understanding, and power. Here are your hosts, Keisha and Barb.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Dirty Playologist. This is Keisha here with my lovely co-host,
Barbara Sheridan.
And today we're going to switch it up a little bit because something happened today that we have got to talk about, Barb.
What happened?
Okay, so I dropped my daughter off at soccer practice like I normally do on a Wednesday, and I decided today that I would treat myself and go get a pedicure and get my feet right, you know, sun's coming out, spring's coming. So I was minding my business, trying to read my ECE book, when I heard two teachers talking. Mm-hmm. And it took all of me not to stand up and out really because the things that they were saying about their students were just despicable, and the attitudes that they had towards the children in general were despicable. But one teacher was telling a story in detail about one of her students, who she, by the way, named first and last name loud and clear. Mm-hmm, loud and clear. She was telling the story of how he was misbehaving and disrupting her classroom, and she asked him, "What's wrong with you, boy?" And he said, "I gotta get out of here." And he got up and he opened the door, and she said he just booked it down the hall. He booked it back and forth, and then out, she said she was about to call the principal, and he came back in and sat in his seat. And she was like, "And you know what, he was fine the whole rest of the class, but I told him he can't just get up and book it when instead of realizing clearly that child needed to move, and allowing that to happen. When he came back, he got in trouble for moving." And what I gathered was, from listening to them talk, it wasn't an environment where he felt safe saying, "Hey, teacher, I need to move," at all. Yeah. Another story she was telling included the first and last name of another child and saying, "Well, you know that it's a part of her," and she did air quotes and said, quote, "disability." So I was like clenching my bag at this point, because clearly she doesn't respect or even believe that the child has a disability that's worthy of an IEP. So what is going on in our school systems? Like, are these the attitudes that the teachers have towards the children in the schools? Is that what you're finding in your area? Because I was like, I'm not totally surprised, because I've worked in public school buildings and I've heard teachers talk in the lounge, but this was another level. Like, we all have stresses and we all have things that frustrate us, but this was like the level of, like, you can tell there's no relationship. There's no, I didn't feel one sense or drip of empathy or even care for the children that they're working with each day. I mean, is this abnormal? Please say it is.
I think that it's sort of on one side of the spectrum, at least I hope that it is. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it it's not, the story doesn't surprise me, I guess is a good way to say that. Like, I mean, the one thing that about the first story that struck me was, you said that the teacher was reflective enough to realize that this running in the hall had helped, and yet didn't seem to care.
Exactly.
Her concern was on her control of her classroom. And I think that's one of the issues when you're looking at sort of this idea within the classroom of the teacher being in charge, you know, because that's sort of the way the public school system is set up, right? I mean, almost any school system that isn't sort of child-directed anyways. And because, you know, you have the teacher and, you know, the teacher is the person in charge, the holder of the knowledge, the one that the kids have to make happy to be able to exist in a meaningful way at the school without being, you know, punished or, you know, sent to detention, what have you. And then above the teacher, you have the principal. So the teacher also has their own teacher in their life, which is somebody that tells them what to do and what not to do. And then above them, they have the superintendent. And, like, it's sort of set up in a way that makes sure that there's always people underneath that have to listen to the person above. And so they're at the, well, I don't know, I guess bottom of the totem pole is not really the, but they're sort of at the bottom of the chain, I guess maybe is the best way to put it, in terms of they don't have any other adults under them, just the other kids. So, you know, it's sort of set up in a way that encourages, you know, control and encourages the person, looking to a person above yourself to tell the other kids what to do.
And in hindsight, I kind of wish I did say something. Like, maybe they're in this bubble of complaining and this bubble of seeing things in this way, and that maybe someone from the outside just said, and I mean, my mouth was watering. I wanted to say, have you ever thought that maybe this child needs to run? How can we make that happen for this child? And just see what she said. But I knew, I mean, I was so upset that it wouldn't have come out like that. Like, I just wanted to shake them. The other teacher, as she was checking out, goes, you know who's been really good for me lately? And she named first and last name of a child. And it was very interesting how she worded that. Who's been good for me lately? And who's been disrupting my class? There's a lot of ownership over that classroom or ownership over that child's behavior. And it really reminds me of what we need to let go of before we get to classrooms where children are making these choices, because it's good for the whole class. It's good for the community. And also because they're getting what they need. So they have to let go of that me, my thing. And that was part of the reason why I felt like there wasn't those relationships there. It just, and she said, there's another part where she said, well, I know he's going through so much with his homeless. Like you said, on one hand, she was very reflective. So that made me a little bit more upset, because I felt like she knew the circumstances. She knew what he needed. And she still, like, to me, it's worse if you know and you still choose to do the opposite. And she still chose not to support him in those needs. And I want to feel like I only know half the story. But it was very clear. I mean, not just to me, but to everyone else in the whole shop. It was very clear that if children are going to classrooms with educators who really feel this way about them, then there's no hope. Absolutely no hope. And I wish I knew what school they worked at, because I'd probably march over there right now and have to speak to the principal. I mean, I'm going to assume it's the school that's around the corner. But so what do we do? How do we, because we work with early childhood education, so we're with children before they go to that environment. But,
well, I mean, I work with kids who are a bit older.
That's true, but so. I'm with kids before they go into that environment. So my kids are, when your children leave you at 8, where do they go?
Well, they, I mean, my oldest is 8, but they don't necessarily leave.
Okay, so you can keep
it. It just so happens right now my oldest is 8, but they can keep coming. Most of the families who come to me are involved with homeschooling.
Okay.
Or who fit well into the system. So they're not the ones that the teachers would be mentioning and complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't, at this point, I haven't really myself had to worry about having a child adjust to that environment, because either they don't go into it if they would be one of the children that those teachers were talking about, or they just plain it wouldn't be. They'd be, oh, you know, they're really good for me. We like them. And so they're fine. They do fine when they go in. They just kind of sneak right in there.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What do you do?
Well, my children do go, most of them go to public school. A few of them seek out schools that are more arts and outdoors focused. But for the most part, they go to public school. And recently, I was talking to the moms of one of my graduates, and she said that her son had to go to the stop and think chair. And I was like, what is that? She said, it's literally a desk and chair facing the wall away from everyone in the classroom. It brought tears to my eyes. I was so upset. And I'm thinking of this child, and I'm thinking, what could he have possibly done? I know him, and I've known him for years. What could he have possibly done to be put in that chair? So I asked her, and she said that he was on the computer playing a math game, and he got it right, and he got really excited and said, yes, really loud. And because he disrupted the classroom, he had to go to the stop and think chair. So, yes. And the mom was upset, and she said, you know, she knows it's wrong, and she that's where she was stuck. Like, I know it's wrong, but I don't want to be that mom, is what she said. She doesn't want to be that mom that goes in and complains about her child in timeout. And I told her, well, you need to be that mom for your child. So it got me thinking about how can we get this message to the school. Like, how can we get this message to people who aren't early childhood trained? And I noticed when I worked in a school, I could spot out the teachers who had worked in early childhood because they had a different way about them. They had more a different, I don't want to dog teachers because I have so many teachers in my family and I love teachers. But when you're trained to simply teach and you're trained to get the information across and help the children, especially now, pass the test, you're not necessarily having the time or the ability to work in empathy, to work in those relationships. There are classrooms out there that are wonderful and educators that are wonderful and can do all of this. But I think that there are a lot of educators who skip over it. And if you have a timeout chair that's facing the wall and you're putting children in it and shaming them or using yellow, green, and red light tactics, I guess. To me, there's no way that those relationships are there. There's no way that empathy is there. And I myself have done it. I had red light, green light, yellow light. I had sticker charts. I had daily reports that I would send home if their child got a happy face or smiley face. So don't get me wrong. I am not saying that these people are terrible. I'm saying that if you know better, do better. So my question is, how do we get the message out so that they know better? Because I think in a lot of instances, you're in a bubble of people, and if you're all doing it, and in some cases it's working, you don't realize that it's not appropriate and that there's a better way. So how do we get what we are saying and doing and know is right for children to that group of educators?
Well, I mean, like, I think, well, first of all, you know, let's we'll clarify even more clearly, because I think we've done a good job, but I just want to make it crystal clear that we're not talking about the vast majority of teachers, because like you said, you know, when you said that about you have teachers in your family, you love the teachers, and most teachers, you know, they're not to the scale that you saw today.
Mm-hmm.
I work with families doing home programming. Some of them do homeschooling, some of them it's in addition to school because school's not meeting their needs. And of the families that I work with that went to the school, I mean, I can't say on a general basis about dealing with the schools, but I would deal with them on that specific basis of talking to the teachers about what this child's specific need is and the specific accommodations that needed to be done for this child. And if something was being done that wasn't good for the child, then that's what we would deal with. So it wasn't like this overall, like, you can't do, you know, red light, green light. It was more, okay, that doesn't work for this child because of these reasons. And a lot of my job was myself being a school advocate when it got to that point, but it kind of backing up the parents, exactly like what you talked about with that one parent who was uncomfortable with what was happening in school but not knowing how to deal with it. And so talking with the parents about how to deal with the school and get what their child needs if their child's needs aren't being met. I think that for me, that would be the most important things for the kids that I work with that went to school, was making sure that their needs were being met, and if they weren't being met, advocating on behalf of them to find a way to get those needs met.
Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, I feel the same way about all of my children, like each individual one of them. I want to make sure that they get their needs met. So one of the things that I did last year, but it never really came of anything. I reached out to the kindergarten teachers. Only one of them called me back. We chatted for a bit. We were supposed to meet, and on both ends, I'll say, it just didn't happen. So I want to do that again. I want to reach out to both of the kindergarten teachers and set up something so that we can start building a bridge and a relationship, because I don't think, especially the lack of respect early childhood has a lot of times, I don't feel like they're going to see me in the light that they'll take much of what I have to say unless they have a relationship with me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to build this relationship with them and hopefully talk to them about what I know, specifically the children that are leaving me individually, what they need, what works for them. And hope that some of the message comes through in that way. I was also thinking about donating some, like, natural loose parts, because I know that last time I went into the classroom, it was not an option. So maybe I can do that to, like, sneak that in there a little bit. But it's just it makes me kind of sad and scared about the children leaving a program such as mine, or any play-based program or child-led program or experience-based program, and going to a traditional school setting. Not that I don't think my kids can handle it, because they go in and they do just fine, but that I just don't think they would reach their full creative potential like they would if they were in a program where they really could spread their wings. Because what we see in them is so amazing that I want everyone to see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do a lot of educating with teachers for that exact reason. So I do workshops with teachers to talk about how to bring more child-directed techniques in and make it acceptable in the school. So basically showing them how to look at play, evaluate play, and then document it so that their principals will be happy is essentially what I tell them. And I think that's a little bit of what we need to do too, is just kind of keep chipping away at that and doing the education and doing workshops and working with teachers and talking to them about the issues. Because, you know, as it becomes more the idea of kind of letting go of control a little bit, becomes more mainstream, you know, that everybody kind of starts going, oh, wow, that's a good idea, and they see it, you know, and then it's sort of like this small shift, this cultural shift that'll start shifting away. Like, I know Peter Gray says that he wants to see self-directed education accomplished in his lifetime, which I hope happens. Because I think that would be fabulous, because then the emphasis is on the students and not on the system. And but it's like, it's a shift. It's not just, you, we're not going to wake up tomorrow and see, you know, everything different. It's it's the shift and, you know, getting out and working with people, because you work with people too as well, don't you?
I do. And one of the things that I've been doing recently is expanding our programs in the school so that people from outside of our school come in. And when they're in our facility and they're seeing the documentation and the photos and just the facility itself and how different it looks, they have lots of questions. And so the dialogue starts. And it takes people back to when they were children. And that conversation starts happening. And it always goes to how they wish that their grandchild or their child had something like this. And then it always goes to school and how this can be implemented there. So I think the more I can have people from outside come into our program, the more we can start these conversations. And I'm in a small town, so I feel strongly that we could make a shift and we could, you know, see the pendulum swing a little bit by a little bit until we see some real change. But that's what we've been doing on this end. We are this week, and we're expanding our outdoor space to create a more adventure playground. Our playground for the children currently is awesome, but we're creating an additional space that's more community use, and we can hold events out there, but the goal is to get our message into the community, to pull the community into our culture and our program. And I, like I said, I'm hoping that that causes some sort of shift in this area. And it's really hard because our high school is number one. And that's based on honors, AP, and high test scores. So it's really driven towards that type of...
academics?
Yes. Yes. So it's a huge mountain to climb, I think, for us.
I'm willing to try. Are you willing to try?
I'm willing
to try. Hopefully everybody out there is willing to try too. So I think that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah.
If you'd like more information about me or my programs, which is located in Barrie, Ontario, that's Barrie, Ontario, Canada. You can check me out on Facebook at barrieforestkindergarten.com or on the web at Facebook/ Barrie Forest Kindergarten. And there you can actually, the workshops that I talked about, I work with educators and parents, and I can work either directly doing consultation, or I can do a workshop to do some of that chipping away. or helping people get to where they want to go if they just don't quite have the tools, or if they just want support and are like, yes, this is what I do. I'm so happy to come to one of these. I've had a lot of that too. So you can check all of that out and get a link to my blog, which is my perspective on nature, kids play, education, and especially where they intersect. How about you, Keisha? Where can they find out about your workshops, consulting, and your school?
Okay, my school is discovery-play.com, and you can find about my workshops and consulting on Play Empowers. So just go to Facebook, type in Play Empowers, and everything will pop up, all my information. And if you would like to email me, it is discoveryelc@hotmail.com. Have a great night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night.
This has been the Dirty Playologist. Back next week with another episode. Thanks for listening.
You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.